Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
All right, well, Toby's, he's found the keys. He's all set and ready. Garage door's up.
Motor Talk with Toby Hagen.
Toby, evening.
G'day, Phil.
EVs and plug-in hybrids are getting a big FBT, fringe benefits tax break.
They are, yeah. This was an election promise.
My mind was glazing a bit when I read the details of this. Can you explain what it is? Because there was the headlines say, "Oh, EVs are going to be cheaper." Is that right?
It is. Yeah. So, well, the purchase price of the car, no.
Right.
But the ownership of it, yes. Provided you're on a salary, provided you earn money, and you package it up through the business, so either through your employer. So basically, you don't pay fringe benefits tax, so you can use it purely as a personal vehicle,
right?
And you won't cop fringe benefits.
And this
tax.
This is exclusive to what is it?
EVs, so pure battery electric vehicles.
So all EVs and plug-in hybrids.
And plug-in hybrids up to the luxury car tax, which is roughly $85,000.
Right.
So it doesn't hit your very expensive ones,
mm-hmm.
but it does take in a whole bunch of the market. So your entry-level Teslas, for example, entry-level Hyundai Ioniq 5s or Hyundai's generally, Kias, BYD, MG, Nissan Leaf, those sorts of things. So,
okay. So
the battery electric vehicles, the plug-in hybrids. The plug-in hybrids do have a sunset clause, so they it will only be, and this was something Senator David Pocock insisted on in agreeing to the bill, was to make it so there was a sunset clause on giving those the same FBT exemption,
mm-hmm.
and that is in 2025. I think it's April 2025 that runs out, so you've got a couple of years or a bit over 2 years to do it with a plug-in hybrid or a FEV, and the battery electric vehicles is ongoing. So it is actually hard to get your head around in terms of how it works. So I'm not a tax expert in all this sort of stuff. There's a benefit to the employer. So the employer benefit, I believe, somewhere around $9,000 or $10,000 annually.
Yep.
And the benefit to the employee is less, but it's still around, depending on your salary, depending on how far you drive the car, depending on the actual car and how much you're spending on it, you know, somewhere around about $4,000 to $6,000 is sort of covers off most of it from what I can tell. So, and that, again, that's an annual advantage. So you package it up for 4 or 5 years, you're potentially up for $20,000 plus. Mm. In terms of tax benefits. So the industry, I think, is expecting some reasonable things. They're not expecting it to be a complete game changer, and there's actually someone in the industry...
No, it won't be from what you've described. It's not going to be a game changer, no.
No, but it's someone I spoke to in the industry today said they actually think the upcoming CO2 regulations could have a far bigger impact. So, again, the Labor government took to the election saying that they will introduce CO2 or emission standards for vehicles in Australia, which we currently don't have. So, you know, I guess looking at the models in other parts of the world, such as Europe and just introduced in New Zealand. So, whether, you know, that obviously has a potentially far bigger impact because it's going to penalise a lot of the existing cars. So those existing cars, if we see what happens in or have a similar thing to what happens in Europe, suddenly you could be up for thousands of dollars in effectively penalties or fines for each one of those cars sold. So it'll make those cars more expensive and it'll, at the same time make EVs and so on more appealing. So
interesting. Okay.
So there's a bit going on with it all and it's... But yeah, I mean, I guess... The advice for a lot of people would be if you're interested in an EV and if you're sitting on the fence at the moment, speak to your accountant, have a chat
to your accountant
and say, say how can this work and what sort of benefit will I get?
Can I make this work?
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of prices, by the way, interesting story in news publications today about price rises on the RAV4.
Yeah.
Now, the Toyota RAV4, as we know, and as you've said many times, very popular car.
Yeah.
A lot of people want one and a lot of people are prepared to wait because you have to.
Yeah, that's
waiting
right.
Waiting times that can be a year.
That's right.
Or more. And now, guess what? You're going to have to pay more as well.
You have to pay more. So some people have been waiting for a year or more, 18 months, some of them,
yeah.
and they've gone through multiple price rises. So they basically
already
said, yeah, guess what? The car's going to be more expensive by the time it gets here. Oh, and by the way, we can't tell you when it's going to get here. And Toyota's now due to put another price rise in effect, about a $1,500 price rise in January. And so at the moment, if you go on the Toyota website, I assume it's the same now, but I looked at it earlier today, and it's they still won't pop up a price of what those cars cost because they can't quite tell you because they don't know yet what the dealer delivery and everything's going to be and so on. So it's crazy. It's an amazing situation that you've suddenly got these cars
you'd think other mid-size SUV. I mean, I know it's good, but you'd think other mid-size SUVs would be in there like a herd of hyenas, wouldn't you?
Well, you would. I think the thing that Toyota has over almost all its rivals is a hybrid system. There are very few credible hybrids in that market, and that one, the RAV4 hybrid, it uses a lot less fuel. It's got the Toyota badge on the front, and people are queuing to own it. And look, it has been pretty sharply priced. I guess with the little asterisks on it that it's now not quite as sharply priced, it's all edging up. But, you know, people are still queuing to own them. I was chatting to a friend today who bought one 2 years ago and is now looking to move overseas. And
sell it for more than he bought it for.
Potentially going to sell it for $5,000 more than he paid for it 2 years ago. Wow. So it's had 2 years of owning the car. So it's, it's an amazing situation.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Mm. Any thought, I know we keep talking about this, but this might be the last time I talk to you this year, is it? Any thought when prices are going to come down on cars?
No. I mean, look, it's the supply and demand thing. It all comes down to supply and demand, and currently demand is still very strong. Depending on which economist you listen to and who you start believing, I think the feeling is that demand will start to come off a bit next year. You know, we're obviously seeing higher interest rates and the ability to borrow is a bit tougher, those sorts of things. So, and also, we've got other car companies, you know, we've got new brands coming into the country. So Chery, for example, this new Chinese brand, is coming into the country very shortly, in the next few weeks or early next year. And they have huge sales ambitions. And so once you get a new player like that coming in and starting to say, you know, we're going to sell a lot of cars, then that tends to ramp up competition. You suddenly start to see the existing players fight back in some way. Might not necessarily be purely on price, but you might see they put more features in or do special editions and that sort of stuff. Okay. So once you start seeing a lot of that activity happening, that's when you start seeing the prices ease. That said, I don't think it's going to go back to what we had, which was, you know, cast your mind back 3 or 4 years.
You and I were talking about the $13,000 car.
Yeah, that's right. But you also, you pretty much were guaranteed a discount on a car. You looked at a price and said, oh, well, we'll be able to knock a couple of grand off that.
You never, ever paid the list price.
No, that's right. And sometimes you got very significant discounts. And there are still discounts around on some models. But on other models, there's not much or nothing. So it's and I think the industry, obviously, the industry loves that. The dealers love it because it pumps their margins up. And I don't think the industry, a lot of people in the industry, obviously, don't want to go back to the old model of forcing cars onto the market and then having to discount them to make sure they sell. And that's the thing, you know, you look at vehicle sales and, vehicle sales are completely dominated by how many the company brings into the country, because if they bring 10,000 cars in, they'll sell them somehow. They'll discount them and so on. So they'll work out ways to do it. And that's it comes down to packaging it up.
Toby Hagen's with us. This is Motor Talk. Toby, as you know, runs a website where all your questions about electric cars can be. There's heaps of information on the website too. It's called evcentral.com.au, EV for electric vehicle, evcentral.com.au. And you're currently running a poll asking people whether they own an EV, interested in buying one, have no plans.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we just want to know.
Interested in the results of the poll, actually. Yeah,
That's right. It's actually been interesting looking at it so far because, we asked, one of the questions we asked for the people who haven't bought an EV yet is, what brands will you consider? So we've sort of listed all the brands that either have an EV now or got one coming soon. And funnily enough, I mean, Tesla accounts for about 80% of the market now. Tesla's not the number one of those brands. Some of the more affordable brands are number one.
I think that is the main issue. I mean, every time we talk about it here on the program and, you know, traffic we get afterwards, price is the big thing. People think they're too expensive. And you know what? For most people, they are.
Yeah, they are. And unfortunately, I can't see that changing enormously. But, some of those other things, as I said, that FBT thing could help a bit, but they are going to have premium prices on them. They do now. But I think one thing I think we'll see changing next year, we're starting to see some of the manufacturers talk about getting in some decent volumes of these vehicles. So Volvo, for example, I think Kia is looking to get a few more of its EV6s in. So once you start to see more volume coming into the market, again, you get that competition factor happening again. And yeah, we might start seeing some slightly sharper prices, or at the very least, you know, the thing we're seeing now with the car companies that can't get big or high volumes into the country, they've spec'd the cars right up. So they put a lot of features in them, a lot of equipment in them, and they end up being quite expensive. So the obvious move there is to take some of those fancy features out, your panoramic sunroofs and ventilated seats and so on, and make a more affordable model, at which point they do become slightly more affordable. But again, I think they'll still have a premium price.
Anyway, check it all out on evcentral.com.au. Let's get to questions. Reg, I've been waiting on there. Hi, Reg.
Oh, g'day, Phil. G'day, Toby. Yeah, so every time you're on, Toby, somebody always rings up and says, look, what do I do if I'm driving an electric vehicle and I run out of charge? And I was just interested in reading the Open Road magazine, the latest one out just recently, and it's interesting that they're the NRMA are going to roll out in their patrol vans a 4.8 kilowatt power bank.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that can deliver 1 kilometre of range in every 2 minutes.
Yep.
Which might come, you know, go some way to relieving at least some of the range anxiety of the electric vehicle driver.
Yeah.
But the question is, so 1 kilometre of range in every 2 minutes, is that considered a slow or a fast charge or somewhere in between?
No, that's pretty slow. So your home power point is pretty much the slowest way to charge an EV, and that's 2.3 kilowatts. So that 4.8 kilowatts is a bit over double your home power point. So yeah, it's a relatively slow charge, but I guess the thing is, you know, it's to get you to inch you to the next charger, I guess, is what it's all about. It's interesting that they're doing that sort of thing, because there's other cars, there are a few EVs on the market that have so-called vehicle to load. So it's just a PowerPoint basically in the car, or sometimes it adapts to the charge port. So it's a thing that plugs into the charge port and again can supply electricity to anything from a laptop computer to, you know, camp lights or another EV. So you can potentially charge another EV off that too. So,
right. So
you know, there will be mobile options for that. And, you know, I dare say in maybe 5 or 10 years, the NRMA might have that sort of functionality basically built into the cars. Because, you know, in America, for example, with the utes, the electric utes they've got over there, the pickup trucks as they call them, the early versions of those all have quite a few power points to power external things. So you could do that quite easily. Again, a slow charge, a relatively slow charge, but it would it'd at least give you an option to get to the next the next charging station.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So it's about twice of what the home power point would be,
A bit over double your home power point, yeah.
Okay, thanks, Reg. We have discussed this before, haven't we? But range anxiety is it's a bit exaggerated, the anxiety needs, because if you did run it flat, that would be your own fault in a way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because the car is going to tell you.
Yeah, the car gives a lot of warnings.
Yeah. You get a lot of warnings about this,
and
basically if you press on, well then, you know.
Yeah, and it does start, potentially shutting down some features, you know, air conditioning, minimise the top speed. But look, range anxiety is a very real thing. It's, you know, I've had it plenty of times where you sort of look at it and think, oh, we're going to be right here. And there's some drives.
You do it with petrol too.
yeah, you do it. But your petrol options, you know, it's pretty easy to find a petrol station.
My mate
generally.
Michael, are you listening? Ran out of petrol on the way down to Melbourne. Yeah. And guess what?
On the way
ran out of petrol on the way back.
That's good going.
You know what? Because he's that kind of guy.
He wants to push it, see how far it can go. So he didn't believe it the first time. He thought he'd test it.
Another 50Ks, I'm bound, I'll be right.
Yeah, that's right.
He wasn't.
But look, range anxiety is a real thing. The thing I find is when you've got an EV that's very accurate on the estimation of how far to go, you have far less range anxiety because you're like, okay, it's telling me there's 200 kilometres. We've only got 150 to do, we'll be fine.
It's the
ones that fluctuate a bit that are a problem. And the other thing's the charging networks. I've driven in Norway where there are charging stations everywhere. It's they're more prolific than petrol stations, and you don't have any range anxiety there because you can pull over anywhere and top up.
Torben, hello.
G'day. G'day, Phil and Toby. My question is, I'm looking at the Cupra Attica that's come onto the market. It's only been, I think it's been out about 6 months.
Yeah.
I was just wondering about your thoughts about it. And also, I've tried to I've had some difficulty actually trying to get an answer from the dealer and also from Volkswagen in regards to, I believe, the 2022 models, as far as putting a tow bar on and whatnot. They don't actually have the wiring for it. Yet the 2023 model that's coming out next year, obviously, does. And I'm wondering how I'm going to go if I do decide to put a tow bar on, even though I'm probably only going to use the tow bar, not for its full towing capacity, but more likely just to put a bike rack on there because, like as you just described, the car I'm getting, thanks to the dealer's generosity, I managed to get one with the panoramic sunroof thrown in along with everything else thrown in and a pretty good discount. So I was actually amazed, but it's only gone about 1,500K, so it's an ex-demonstrator.
Yeah, right.
I thought I was going to be waiting 6 months.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe my luck.
Well, I was going to say, because Cupra is working to one of these agency models. So basically the prices are fixed. So you look at the price on the website. The dealers are Cupra. You're effectively buying through the website and everything, so it doesn't matter. You can't go in and necessarily crunch a deal, but where they do have some flexibility is when you've got a demonstrator like that, and that's what we're seeing with Mercedes-Benz as well, which has got a similar fixed price model these days. And Mercedes, again, some of the demonstrators tend to have some decent discounts on them. So look, the Cupra Attica or Ateca, depending on who you chat to about the pronunciation, is as you probably know, and you mentioned Volkswagen. It's all Volkswagen stuff underneath, so it's very much Volkswagen. They've got three models in their range, so and the Attica is the oldest, if for want of a better term, even though it's a new car in Australia. It has some of the older switchgear and so on inside the car. And I actually don't mind that because some of the newer Volkswagen switchgear, it's gone too far towards touch buttons and slidey things instead of just dials and physical buttons, which tend to work better.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I also tested, as well as an example, is also the Cupra Formentor.
Yeah.
And I noticed the difference in their digital switchgear and the infotainment screen, and how it doesn't light up, and there's a whole lot of I watched a whole lot of videos, read your review, and I was kind of sort of stunned. And then my mechanic said to me, "Look, you're probably better off going for the SUV as opposed to the Formentor, because it's got the controls and it's a bit more old school. So it's good in some ways, not so good in others."
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I'm quite a fan of them. I mean, it's a lesser-known brand. The big unknown with those newer brands is what's the car going to be worth in 3 or 4 years. But I think it's playing in a portion of the market that you'll have enough interest in it. They're not selling in enormous numbers. And they've got a bit of fun factor to them, and a bit of suaveness. So I think in a few years there'll be enough people there to prop up those residual values. So I'm a bit of a fan. I reckon they're pretty cool.
Okay, Torben, thank you. 1-300-800-222. Vivian from Northcote. G'day, Viv.
Oh, hi, Toby. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
I bought a new Kia nearly a year ago,
and
I'd been driving it around for a few weeks, and I noticed the brakes were occasionally going a bit soft, and I thought, oh, a new car settling in maybe. And then a couple of times I went nearly to the floor with the brakes before they engaged. So I took it back to the dealership, and they kept it for the day. Then they rang me up, and they said, no fault. There's no fault detected. Come pick it up and take it home. So I went and picked it up, probably a bit stupidly, and halfway home, the brakes went again. So next day I took it back, and half an hour after I let out, I get a call from the mechanic saying, oh, yeah, I just thought what happened. That was really scary. I'm like, yeah, it is really scary. Anyway, so they found that the brake master cylinder was faulty.
Wow.
And they replaced it, but then they just rang me up and said, oh, you can come pick it up now. Now, I tried to get in touch with Kia. I had no sort of call from the dealership. I had no call from Kia. Like, as far as I'm concerned, they've put me at risk.
Yeah.
And, and I just sort of feel like, should they be taking some action to, I don't know.
What would you like them to do, Viv? What would you swap the car out? Give you a new one?
Well, I kind of feel like the car's all right now.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm feeling is, I mean, can you sell somebody a car with dodgy brakes?
Mm. Well, no.
Say, oh, look, sorry. Okay, we'll fix it. But
yeah. Well, know. I mean, no. Is the short story? Obviously, you know, anything to do with brakes is usually taken extremely seriously. With any time you see the slightest issue with the braking system, if it's a you know, a broader thing covering multiple models, they'll just recall the whole lot of them because they understand obviously the braking system is pretty much the most important part of the car. So so they tend not to muck around with that. But that's not to say that you can't have individual faults with any component on a car. The thing is how they obviously address that and how they fix it and whether they can, you know, whether they take it seriously from the start. And I guess, you know, probably looking back on it, you might have been better to ring them and say, I don't feel comfortable driving this car. The brake pedal's going to the floor. Can you come and get it, basically? And they can truck it or whatever to get it away from you. But no, I mean, short story is obviously they've got to take that thing seriously. But, you know, as I said, things can happen. Individual things can happen. And I think most people appreciate that with all brands, whether it's car or other brands. And the issue is how a company addresses it and how quickly they and efficiently they rectify it. And it sounds like, you know, you had an issue, but
so they fixed it, Viv, but you'd actually like for Kia to say sorry or do something.
Yeah, I think that's basically it. That, yeah. Like, I still feel occasionally a bit nervy about the fact that I was driving around with
I get that, because you're thinking, well, you know, will it happen again?
Well, yeah, and anything could have happened, and I didn't get a call from anybody to say, look, we're really sorry, that must have sucked. You know, let us throw you some free car mats or your next services for free.
Or even just to ring you and say, look, this is the nature of the fault. Please be reassured it won't happen again because the whole master cylinder has been replaced. It's fine now.
Yeah.
No, I get that. I get that.
I mean, the other option here, you can obviously give this feedback to Care Customer Service. So give rather than the dealer.
And you won't get a call back. Like, I've rung them about 5 times and no one ever gets back to you.
Yeah, right. Mm.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'll mention it to them.
We'll pass this on, Viv.
Yeah, we should actually grab your details
I'll put you back on hold, Viv. Can we get your details? Robbie will take them, and if you don't mind, we'll contact Kia.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay. All right. Thanks so much.
Don't hang up, Robbie. Can we just get Vivian's details there on line 4, and her contact details, and we'll see what we can get a rise out of Kia on that. But you can understand what Vivian's saying.
Like, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, any time a car has issues with brakes, it can be pretty frightening.
Totally.
For sure. So,
totally.
So yeah.
1-300-800-222 is the number. David wants to ask about the Toyota Tundra. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad.
What do you know about the new Tundra coming in, and is it likely to come in with the hybrid?
So I'm not sure about the hybrid, but look, Toyota has announced that they will do they are working on a conversion program. So they're going to look to do left to right hand drive conversions in Australia. The company they're using is Walkinshaw, so which is the former HSV, the Holden Special Vehicles, the company that did Holden Special Vehicles.
Mm-hmm. And
as you probably know, yeah, that's right. As you probably know, they do Ram trucks and Ram pickup trucks and Chevy pickup trucks. So they currently do those two brands. So they've got a pretty good track record with doing conversions from left to right-hand drive and getting factory approval for those conversions. Now, that said, Toyota is an extremely conservative company, and they don't take that sort of thing too lightly in terms of letting someone else cut their car up effectively and do some fairly major modifications to it. So Toyota hasn't 100% committed to selling them yet. What they've said is, we're going to do this remanufacturing process, and we intend to sell them, but we're going to I think they said 200 or 300 cars they're going to start putting on the market, or start doing conversions for late next year, and then do all their engineering work on those vehicles. And look, I think a massive chunk of this is so that they can go back to Toyota Japan. This is Toyota Australia. Go back to Toyota Japan and say, right, send all your engineers out. Come and look at what these guys have done. Analyze it. Make sure it lives up to the Toyota standards. Because obviously, once they put it into a Toyota dealership, people buying them expect them to be of the same quality and reliability and everything as a Corolla, as a Land Cruiser, as anything else. So, there's still many hurdles to overcome to get that car into dealerships, but I'm fairly confident it'll happen.
I'm sure I saw an article from, I think it was Drive or something, saying it was confirmed for Australia, and that's what I thought, hang on.
Confirmed with an asterisk is my understanding. Uh-huh. So the asterisk being, provided that this car, you know, again, they're doing the 200 or 300 conversions. They're not just doing it as, oh, yeah, we'll see what happens, see if there's interest. They know there's interest. But there's a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross, basically, and they have to make sure they hit all those things. So it's all but confirmed, but as I said, my understanding is there's still an asterisk there that can be activated if they need it to. I'd be very surprised if it didn't happen. They're clearly working towards that. They're clearly confident that will happen, but they just need to make sure that they tick all the boxes on the way through. So as for the hybrid, I'm not sure about that. Look, Toyota has said they want to have a hybrid of all their mainstream models on the market by 2030 in Australia. So you know they would certainly be thinking about it at some point, but I'm just not sure where that is at the moment on the hybrid front with that car. But it's going to be an interesting one. I mean, don't forget Ford's also bringing out F-150, and they're doing conversions of that next year, so mid next year in Australia. And that's being done by a separate company. So you'll have three of those big ones being done by Walkinshaw and the fourth one from another company. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of action at that end of the ute market. There's certainly a lot of interest in those vehicles. And expect to see many more sales of them. We've seen the sales grow already, and I think it'll keep going.
Okay, thanks, David. Tyler from Potts Point. G'day, Tyler.
Hey, Toby. How's it going?
Not bad.
Hey, quick question. Like, I'm just curious to know why it's still taking so long to get cars into Australia, right? So we've been through COVID. It's been a good 12 months now. You can buy a computer, a mobile phone, a TV, all that stuff's back to normal. Why are cars so still behind? Because, you know, all the components seem to be back to normal for everything else. What's the issue with car supply?
Global demand is the short story, is one of the major problems. So it's not just an Australian issue. It's in America, it's in other parts of the world as well. And there's just strong demand for cars. There is still an issue with microchips, so semiconductors, where they can't get enough, because cars can have hundreds of semiconductors in them. So some of the companies are still struggling with getting enough or manufacturing enough computer chips. But ultimately it's production. The production of some models can't keep up with the global demand. So it's we're in the situation where for some cars you have to wait. Other cars
is it worse in Australia? Do you think
I'm not sure. I've heard some parts of the world some other parts of the world aren't great. You know, Europe, for example, they've got enormous demand for electric cars because they sort of need them to hit the emissions regulations. Oh, yeah. So if they don't get them, they end up paying fines elsewhere. So there are big supply issues with some models. And again, I keep saying that some models you don't have to wait for at all, pretty much. But at some end of the market, you do.
All right. Thanks, Tyler. Margot in Canberra. Hi, Margot. Margot says on the text line, just wanting your opinion on the Skoda range, please. Do they have hybrid models? Are they worth the cost? Honestly, it's just so hard to know what to buy. I've looked at the venue, which I quite like. So confused, real hybrid electric, the cost involved, and then the worry of being outdated in a short time. I get that last sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, because I think a lot of people are thinking, hang on, am I buying a technology that actually in 5 years' time is going to be all over?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one. I don't think, and I've had quite a few people ask me this about utes, for example, diesel utes, saying, you know,
should I buy a new diesel ute?
Yeah, but if you look at it now, so we're up to 2 to 3% of the market is EVs.
Yeah.
So 97-odd% of the market is internal combustion engines today. So it's ICE vehicles. So it's, you know, the market is still dominated by internal combustion engines. Yes, the technologies, or yes, we're switching over to electric.
But it's glacial, isn't it?
It's actually picking up. It's starting to snowball. We're starting to see more interest. But, you know, even the most optimistic are saying by 2030 we might get to half the market. I tend to think it'll actually be a bit more than that. I think it'll probably be more like 60%. But, you know, there'll still be a lot of petrol and diesel vehicles being sold in a few years. So,
what do you reckon about Skodas?
Look, they've got some, you know, as you probably know, they're Volkswagens. So it's all Volkswagen technology underneath. And they have some terrific models. So I think some of the standouts, the Kamiq, the base model Kamiq is great. So that's their smallest SUV. It was terrific value 3 years ago when it used to be less than $30,000. It's now a lot more than $30,000. So most of their range has crept up in terms of prices. And some of that awesome value is now just decent value. So, as I said, the Kamiq is great. The Kodiaq is a terrific seven-seater, a sort of mid-size seven-seater, which works really well. And some of their passenger cars, the Octavia, work really well, and they do a wagon version of that as well. So I'm a fan of them. Again, going in with that mindset that it is a Volkswagen, so cross-shop them with the Volkswagen, see if the model you're looking at, the features you're looking for. If you can get a better deal at Volkswagen, because the engine, everything else is a lot of the stuff underneath is the same.
Yep. Okie doke. 1-300-800-222 is the number if you'd like to call. Graham from Ballarat. G'day, Graham.
Hello there.
Hi.
My question is, we're talking now on VW.
Yep.
The Tiguan.
Tiguan.
Two models of Tiguan. I had a test drive.
Tiguan.
I just wanted.
Tiguan, Graham. Yeah, Tiguan, yeah.
What's your impressions, and are they a good buy?
Yeah, Tiguan's a great buy. It's, of those mid-sized SUVs, it's probably one of the sharpest dynamically. So in terms of, turning into corners and the way it settles into a corner, it's very good in that regard. It's got some cleverness in the cabin, so in terms of space utilisation and that sort of stuff. Quite a nice, a choice of engines, but the turbocharged four-cylinder engines work really well in that car. Some of them have got these DSG transmissions, which I'm not always a fan of. So the twin-clutch automatic transmissions, which don't always engage as consistently or smoothly as a regular torque converter transmission. So that's sometimes a bit of an issue, depending on the model you're looking at. But I think generally they're good. I mean, I wouldn't rule out some of the alternatives, competitors. Kia Sportage is very good. The Toyota RAV4 we touched on earlier. Some of those competitors, it's a very strong segment, that mid-sized SUV segment. There's 20-odd options in there, and there's a lot of very good options. But certainly
Some of those others are very hard to get to because the waiting times and all.
Yeah, well, the RAV4 is the biggest issue with that one. But Tiguan is...
You can get by a Tiguan, can you?
Well, there were issues with Tiguan. So 6 months ago, 12 months ago, there were enormous issues getting hold of some of the Tiguans. I believe that a lot of those have been sorted out now. So they are bringing in some decent numbers of them. So it's not nearly as bad as it was 6 or 12 months ago. But
there's two models there, a shorter one and a larger one, but a little longer.
Yeah, that's right. A longer boot on it and the seven seats. So that longer one with the seven seats, the third row of seats is very much an occasional set of seats. You're not going to go consistently putting people there, and it really is more for kids than anything else. But it's handy if you've got one or two kids to drag around and they want to bring a mate or two, then it works really well. But as I said, bigger families who are going to regularly use the third row are better off going for the next size up. But those mid-sized SUVs, as I said, some thoughtfulness in the cabin and pretty good. I touched on it earlier with the infotainment systems. I'm not a fan of what Volkswagen's done with some of that because in the latest Golf and so on, it's they're packing too much into the screen, and you have to end up going through menus. And as I said, getting rid of things like volume dials is crazy. And Volkswagen's pretty much admitted that, and they're looking to change it. It's not going to happen overnight or indeed in the next 6 or 12 months, but they're working on addressing that because they've had a bit of feedback.
Proceed with confidence, Graham.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Toby Hagen's with us. Now, Toby, we've talked a bit in the past about, we get the occasional question too, about wheelchair-friendly cars. So Volkswagen's just revealed a version of its Caddy, which has been modified for wheelchairs.
Yeah, that's right. So the Caddy Maxi Life, which is sort of a seven-seat, compact-ish people mover, but it's a pretty clever looking thing. And they've just announced that in Australia they will start doing these conversions. The conversion itself happens overseas, but it's a really clever conversion to to take a wheelchair in the back. So sometimes you see some of those wheelchair converted vehicles and they're very obvious from the back. You can see it all sort of looks like it's been stuffed in fairly badly. This one's really neat. So it's really neat the way they've packaged it underneath. It's approved by the factory. It obviously comes with a full factory warranty and all that sort of stuff. But very clever the way the ramp comes down, the way it's got a system to try and drag the wheelchair up, so to help you assist the wheelchair go up.
Yep.
And it's still got five seats. And you can turn it into a six-seater if the wheelchair isn't on board. So a very clever conversion. They've done full safety testing with it, so it comes with crash ratings and so on, that and full European approval. So the conversion itself, not cheap. So the car, you've got to buy the base car, and that's roughly $50,000. And then the conversion on top of that is, they haven't announced the pricing, but it's going to be around about $25,000 for
the
conversion.
So it's not cheap, but...
Not cheap, but it looks like you can get that $25,000
funded on the NDIS.
NDIS, yeah. So okay. It's, yeah. So not the whole car. So the 50 grand car is, I believe, not supported by the NDIS, but the conversion side of it is. And
it's pricey though, isn't it, for a conversion?
It certainly is, yeah. But it's it is pricey. But but as I said, it ends up being in, we had a good look around it, and it's a it does look like a very high quality conversion.
Okay. Interesting. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Robert from Cairns. G'day, Robert.
Yes, g'day.
Hi.
Question for a general question. What's the best car to drive?
Porsche 911.
Toby thinks a Porsche 911 is the best car to drive.
Yeah, it is. It's every time I get into one, it's such a joy to drive. Everything from it, from the steering to the brake, the consistency of the brakes. Obviously, the performance, but the all-round package, sensational. Now, I appreciate not everyone can...
Got 300.
Well, very few people, myself included, can afford a 911. But, so I guess if you're coming down to mainstream vehicles, the cars we all drive every day, there really isn't there's not an easy answer to that in terms of, I look at electric cars, for example. When we talk about refinement, throttle response, acceleration, all that sort of stuff, then electric cars kill it. They nail it in that regard. They've got phenomenal throttle response. They have torque where you need it. They've got all that stuff nailed, but they're not always great in some other areas. You've got extra weight with the batteries, so dynamically around corners and so on, they can feel a bit more ponderous. And then you can get cars, some cars that have extremely comfortable rides, so a very supple and soft suspension on them, but they're not going to be as sharp round corners. So there's no direct answer to that in terms of, what car is best, because, what works for some people will not for others. But
what's the best place to go for a holiday?
Yeah, it's something like that. And it's, so it's tricky. It'd be like saying what's the best restaurant, because, clearly a restaurant where... the five-star restaurants where you're paying a couple hundred dollars for dinner are terrific, but is everyone going to go there all the time? Probably not. So it's a bit like that with cars, a bit of a get what you pay for. But as I said, there's an enormous spread of what the car's trying to achieve. So I can really appreciate, some people movers that, that Volkswagen Caddy we touched on earlier, as far as a seven-seat car, that's a great car to drive. It's a really nice car to drive, but it's got compromises elsewhere. And it's, a RAV4 is a good car to drive, but again, I touched on that Tiguan in terms of the steering directness, all that sort of stuff. It's a step up. So there are compromises all over the place. The one thing I can say is there is no such thing as the perfect car. Every car has compromises, faults, issues that could be improved on, and it depends, I guess, what side of the ledger you're on, what you want the car to do, and how much you're prepared to pay.
Okay. What do you think about the new Jeeps, says my texter?
Well, I actually haven't driven the latest Grand Cherokee. So the Grand Cherokee is the newest Jeep, and I was due to get into one, and it's disappeared off my schedule because they had an issue with something. So it's gone. So I'm still trying to get into that latest Grand Cherokee. Look, some of their other cars, they're a little bit challenged on some things. I guess the iconic Jeep, the Wrangler, the one that, everyone, when you imagine Jeep, that's the car that pops into most people's minds. And... that's one of these cars that...
Do you reckon anyone would buy a Jeep if it wasn't for the shape?
Oh, the look is a massive part of
it. I know. That's basically it, isn't it?
There would be some who go for it for the off-road ability, which is incredible. But years ago, we did a thing on a story on cars by postcode. So we looked at, you know, we got the ABS data and broke it down on where all the different models were popular. And there was some quite interesting stuff there. One of which was Jeep. The most popular suburb for Jeep was Bondi. So, I think it was more about the look there than driving over the gutters and so on.
They can't park anywhere there anyways.
No, that's right. So, but look, some of the other cars, the Compass, for example, it's feeling a bit tired. It's feeling off the pace. That's their small SUV. It's nothing special. The Cherokee is pretty much gone, I think. I think they're basically discontinuing that, at least for the moment. And you got the Gladiator, the Ute, which is, again, the Gladiator, it's a cool looking Ute. It's effectively a Wrangler turned into a Ute, and it's got a lot going for it. It's also got issues, and one of those issues is, when you sit in the driver's seat, normally you have your left foot, you get a footrest, so you get a nice place to place your foot. You don't get it in that car because they didn't really think too much about the right-hand drive version of it, so they didn't allow any space for your feet. So you sort of end up with your left foot trying to work out what to do. So things like that.
All cars have that, yeah.
Most cars have a footrest these days. So funnily enough, some of them don't, and I remember... I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I remember asking a car company years ago, I said, "Oh, you haven't got a footrest there?" And they said, "Well, the reason we don't have the footrest is because it wouldn't have passed the crash test." So the Independent and CAP, the Australasian New Car Assessment Program, when they did the crash test dummies, it created an issue with injuring the dummy's left leg. So they just got rid of the footrest and that was it. So you end up without a footrest. So sometimes some strange stuff like that goes on. But as I said, that Gladiator and the Wrangler, you don't have a whole lot of room for for your left foot.
Okay, Julia. Hello. Hi, Julia.
Hello.
Hi, Julia.
Oh, hi there. I'm calling from Philadelphia. I'm an Aussie and I'm just about to move back to Australia for a period of time, probably a few years.
Oh, yeah.
And I have
You can't,
no
Julia,
idea.
There's no, the place is full, sorry.
Oh, please, no, I wanted to come back for years. So I have got no clue what to do about a car. I've been driving, my history is a Highlander for 20 years.
Yeah, which is a Kluger here.
That off. All right, okay, and I've just had an Outback.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought both of those new, and I loved them both. I especially love the Highlander.
Yep.
And I've just given the Outback to my son, and I'm driving a friend's car until I come back to Australia, and that's an Audi, which I don't like.
Yeah.
But I've got no idea. So I just want something between maybe 20,000 and 30,000.
Yeah, right. So you're looking secondhand.
Yeah,
cool.
You'll
struggle otherwise. It sounds like you prefer the Japanese vehicles more than the European ones going off that. The Toyota Highlander in America is a Toyota Kluger here, which the reason they don't call it Kluger here is because Hyundai owns the Highlander name in Australia. So they actually pulled rank and said, no, we'll keep that, thanks. So they had to come up with another name for it in Australia. So that's why we've got Klugers instead of Highlanders. But and Subaru Outback, is a... obviously, we have that here. We have Subarus here. But
they're very popular, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And look, if you've been happy with the Outback, I'd thoroughly recommend sticking that on your shortlist because I think the Outback is a terrific crossover, a terrific blend of, traditional wagon and with some SUV-ness to it. Obviously,
what about a Forester?
Yeah, Forester, if you want to come down a fraction in size, is fine.
It's just me.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, yeah, Forester will do the trick as well. But if you're then hunting in that area of the market, don't forget some of the others there too. Mazda, for example, which Mazda is very small in North America. In Australia, it's the second biggest selling brand, so it's an enormous brand over here. So on that used car market, you're going to have a lot of options and a lot of SUVs that you can look at. So, in the Mazda market, Mazda CX-5 is the closest they've got to a Subaru Forester. Mazda CX-30 is the next size down, so you'll have more options there and some very good options in that Mazda market. And yeah, you've already touched on Subaru. I'm trying to think what else. The you know, some of the Toyotas, if you can get hold of them. So we've got you know, obviously RAV4 we've touched on is good, but they're holding up extremely well. But yeah, I'd be, you know, Subaru and Mazda would be a good place to start.
And do you think I should go through a dealer or buy it?
Oh, it depends. Look, if you're looking at, you know, dealers tend to charge more, so they put the dealer margin on it. They make money on them, obviously, and they tend to charge a bit more. If it's a near new car that has been looked after, so I'd be looking at the service history, make sure it has been properly maintained. I wouldn't have an issue at all going with a private buyer. But it would be worthwhile, if you don't know what you're looking at, be worthwhile getting an independent inspection. So, you know, the motoring clubs and so on will do those independent inspections. They usually cost a few hundred dollars. But, you know, find the car you're interested in. Once you're happy with it, get that independent inspection, and that's peace of mind.
Okay. When are you coming back, Jules?
Okay. I'm coming back at the end of January.
Hey!
And starting off with a trip for 2 weeks in Tassie with some friends from Australia.
Oh, you'd do fantastic. Enjoy.
Sounds great. Enjoy. Yeah. You get some roads.
You get great roads. Yeah. Best roads in the country in Tassie. That's right.
Yeah.
Go on, you, Julia. Thanks. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Julia, on the line from Philadelphia in the US of A. Gee, look how time has flown. Where are we? Bruce, sorry, we've probably got time for yours. Yes, g'day, Bruce.
G'day, fellas. How you going?
Not bad.
Good.
Just a comment, really, about the worrying aspect of the fringe benefits tax changes from a point of view of being a regional business owner and seeing a lot of other regional businesses. It's effectively penalising us for living in the regions and having big distances to drive. There's not a vehicle, an electric vehicle, a plug-in hybrid that really can help most businesses in Mackay, for example, at the moment.
Plug-in hybrids will. You can drive a plug-in hybrid anywhere you can drive a diesel or a petrol car, so they'll go as far. I hear what you're saying, though. You're basically saying, you know, obviously for the battery electric vehicles, for those electric ones, at the moment there aren't as many options here. I think you'll see that change over the next couple of years. We're going to start seeing more electric utes and those sorts of things, because the car makers are seeing that there's volume here. They're realising that people are prepared to pay a premium for them. And look, I also appreciate that there will be some use cases, some things that people want to do with them. It's just not going to work if you need to tow big loads and travel big distances. As of today, it doesn't really work in a battery electric vehicle, but I think you'll see once the charging infrastructure improves, which it is improving enormously in Queensland, well, around the country for that matter, and as I said, the vehicles, you'll certainly have a lot more there. But as I said, I appreciate it's not going to necessarily suit everyone for every type of vehicle they need for their business, but yeah, hopefully that'll improve.
Alrighty, just before you go, this is why some people have got too much money in the world. Porsche have revealed an off-road version of their 911, your favourite car.
911, yeah, the 911 Dakar, which referencing that Dakar rally, and it's...
$500,000.
Yeah, $500,000 in Australia, and it's it's a pretty cool-looking thing, though. Like, it's got obviously a raised ride height. They've done some images of it with, you know, some of the roof racks and spare tyres and so on the roof. Terrific-looking car, and I'm sure it'll be amazing off-road, but... who's ever going to take one of those off-road?
You're not going to spend $500,000 and take it off-road.
No, I don't think many of them will get too dirty.
Toby, terrific. Thanks, mate. Talk to you. Actually, I won't talk to you again this year because I'll be off in a couple of weeks.
Well, so happy Chrissy. Have a good break, and I'll see you next
year.
Same
to you and your family, and we'll see you again next year.
Sounds cool.
Don't forget evcentral.com.au and give Toby your thoughts on EVs too.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.